thinking better and thinking together about life's most important issues. A place to finally meet in the middle, to think freely and reasonably about the big questions of life. This is Thinker Sensitive. Welcome to Thinker Sensitive. My name is Ryan Ragazine, and I am your host. Today's episode is the second part of a two-part podcast on deconstruction. I'm going to pick up right where we left off last episode, taking a look at the various reasons for the contemporary deconstruction movement. Why are so many people deconstructing Christian belief and practice today? I think the first reason is idealism. Some of this comes from the church itself and the leaders of the church. Spiritual pride, moral superiority, self-righteousness. Creating a facade of moral and spiritual perfectionism. Some church leaders represent themselves as God-like figures who can say no wrong and can do no wrong. Creating cult-like environments. This can produce false expectations. When Christians are exposed to the inconvenient truths of church ministry, that churches and the people who lead them are messy and flawed, it can shatter their faith. The church isn't perfect. It's not what they claim. They're liars and hypocrites. I was deceived and lied to. This realization can come about in a variety of ways. Over time, Christians naturally become aware of the checkered past of the church. You can't erase it from history. Members of the church may come in direct contact with some of the ugliness of church ministry. At the end of the day, the church is made up of broken people. Christians who actually read their Bibles might find some unpleasant things, especially if they're reading the Old Testament. Some members may even experience personal abuse from their leaders, whether sexual, physical, verbal, or otherwise. Personal hurt, personal pain and trauma plays a big part in all of this. I thought I would find healing here, but I was wounded and scarred instead. I thought this would be a place of goodness, but instead it's a place of corruption. The idealism and perfectionism doesn't always come from the church, however. Sometimes it comes from us. Sometimes we enter the church with an unrealistic expectation of perfection. If it's not perfect, then I can't accept it. Everything needs to be perfect in order for everything to be right and true on a general level. So when we become aware of imperfections, we do away with it all. The contemporary deconstruction movement tends to focus heavily on the flaws, failings, and hypocrisy of the church. My personal process of deconstruction never really focused on this. I was always more focused on beliefs than on behavior, on doctrine and truth claims rather than on leaders and congregants. I never expected Christians to be perfect. I was never surprised by stories of moral failings. I expected this kind of thing. I think part of this is because I was pretty familiar with the biblical narrative. The great heroes of the faith in Scripture were all quite flawed, to say the least. And God actually chose many of them for this very reason. Noah was a drunk. Abraham was a liar. Moses was a murderer. Aaron, the first high priest, was an idolater. Yes, there is biblical precedence for priests being corrupt. David was an adulterer. And the list goes on and on. In Christianity, Christ is the sole object of faith, not one's pastor, priest, or worship leader. So when your church leader falls and it shakes your faith, I would ask you this. Is your faith in your church leader or in Jesus Christ? The other thing is that misconduct, hypocrisy, and poor behavior don't discredit belief and truth. Some deconstructionists act as if religious hypocrisy is a defeater for religious faith, but it's definitely not. There's a difference between poor character and poor doctrine. Truth transcends behavior. Just because someone is a jerk doesn't mean that what they believe isn't true. Their attitude may very well cause the beliefs that they profess to fall on deaf ears. But this doesn't mean that the beliefs in question are false. We seem to understand this in the political dimension of life, but have a hard time understanding this in the religious dimension. When a political leader in my party commits adultery or lies under oath, I don't treat this politician's actions as a defeater of my political beliefs. I recognize that the sporadic moral failings of individual leaders in my political party don't discredit the beliefs and policies of the party as a whole. Why do I understand this in the political sphere, but not in the religious sphere? The second reason why so many people are deconstructing Christianity today is poor thinking and poor communication. This has to do with both the doctrine of the church itself and the way that that doctrine is taught. Both what is said and how it is said. In the church, it is not uncommon to hear very simplistic, black and white, and unnuanced lessons being taught in a very close-minded, objective, and dogmatic environment. Questions are discouraged. Concerns are dissuaded. When a moral law or precept is presented, no explanation is given as to why the precept exists. There's no attempt to answer the why question, which is really where you will find the heart of a good and loving God. The letter of the law is taught without the spirit of the law. The heart of God is concealed and left hidden under the dryness and coldness of a rule. Theology is also taught in a very rigid manner, in a way that actually restricts God, trapping him in a box and limiting his freedom. God only does things this way. God only responds in this manner. When these external expectations that are placed on God are not met, the faith of congregants is shaken. See, this God is too small. This view of God is too narrow. People need a bigger God. All of this is very Pharisaic, which is ironic considering that some churches more closely resemble the enemies of Christ than Christ himself. A Pharisaic perspective distorts the message of Christianity. But poor thinking and poor communication don't just come from the leaders of the church. They come from us as well. For example, distortions of the Christian message that sometimes spawn from the church itself can evoke strawman arguments from deconstructionists who think they are deconstructing Christianity, but in reality, they're actually just deconstructing a misrepresentation of Christianity. We also have a tendency to universalize our subjective experience, to view our personal experience as normative when it's actually not. I've seen this a lot in deconstructionist circles. Because my pastor didn't have the answers, no pastor has the answers. Again, because my church leaders failed me, all church leaders are failures. Because I was exposed to false teachings in a Christian church, Christianity as a whole is false. We have to remember that our personal and subjective experience is a small sample size in the scheme of things. The third reason for the contemporary deconstruction movement is a conflict in values. So far, we have discussed conflicts between church members and the church, between Christians and distortions of Christianity. But what about conflict between people and Jesus of Nazareth himself? Jesus was a countercultural figure in his day, so much so that he was nailed to a cross and crucified. If he was countercultural in his own time, how much more countercultural would a deeply religious, first-century Palestinian man be in the United States in the 21st century? To say that there is natural conflict between the values, practices, and belief system of the historical Jesus and 21st century Americans is an understatement. I would argue that there is conflict between Jesus and all people, both people inside the church and people outside the church. I talked about the conflict between Jesus of Nazareth and evangelical Christians in my episode Cultural Christianity. But much of what I said in that episode also applies to those outside of evangelicalism and outside of the church. Without rehashing everything I stated in that episode, people tend to make Jesus in their own image. So Jesus becomes the conservative Jesus, or the liberal Jesus, the fundamentalist Jesus, or the progressive Jesus. But the Jesus of history was neither. Jesus transcended all categories and all labels, for he was wholly other. Today, especially in the West, we tend to approach Christ from an egocentric and self-centered perspective. I know this isn't going to be a popular statement, but I say it because I absolutely believe that it's true. And I think it's true for both evangelicals and non-evangelicals, those outside the church and those inside the church. This is a very American thing to do, by the way. I make Christianity about me. We make Christianity about us. It's about what I believe, what I think, what I feel, what I want. But Christianity isn't primarily about me. It's about Christ. It's about what he believes, what he thought, what he felt, what he wants. Christ is the object of Christianity, the object of Christian faith, not me. And there will always be natural conflict between my values, my priorities, my belief system, my wishes, and his. But if anyone is to conform or change in this relationship, it's me. As a Christian, I'm summoned to conform to him, to sacrifice for him, to follow him. He's not supposed to conform to me, to sacrifice for me, and follow me. This religion is called Christianity, not Ryananity. The last time I checked, Jesus said, quote, "Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." Dietrich Bonhoeffer, paraphrasing this statement, said that when Jesus calls you, he, quote, "bids you to come and die. Those are tough words, but it doesn't make them any less true. Christianity is not an easy path. It is a trying and difficult one, but one that I believe is more than worthwhile. Now, some within the deconstruction movement fully realize this. Others, I think, have come to realize this over time. And I think this is reflected in the progression that you see sometimes from the ex-evangelical label or hashtag to the ex-Christian label or hashtag. I think that some people come to realize, to their own credit, that the conflict in values isn't simply with evangelicalism or conservative Christianity, but with Jesus himself. I have a lot of respect for those who come to this realization, because such people are taking the call of Christ seriously and are counting the cost. Something that all people who approach Jesus with honesty and sincerity must do. Now that we've looked at the various reasons for why people are deconstructing Christianity today, I want to give a brief appraisal and a brief critique of the deconstruction movement. Critical questioning, base skepticism, criticism, and having the courage to speak up and speak truth to power are good things. All of these things are good because the church is deeply flawed. In a lot of ways, the church in the United States has departed from the criterion of Christ and the way of the early church. If no one speaks up and offers criticism, then nothing will change for the better. There are strong parallels here with the Protestant Reformation, and I think there is much for deconstructionists to learn from this era of church history. This is, of course, the value of history itself, to learn from both past successes and past failures, to place yourself in a position to replicate the good of history and to avoid the bad. The Protestant reformers had many of the same values that contemporary deconstructionists have. In fact, they were deconstructionists in their own rights. Their overall goal was to reform a wayward church and bring it back to the way of the early church, deconstructing various distorted beliefs and practices along the way. Though I believe that their intentions were usually pure, they didn't always do these things with the right heart and the right spirit. Some of the lewd, childish, and venomous rhetoric of Martin Luther is a great example of this. The reformers themselves departed from the way of Christ on many occasions and in many ways. You think of all the senseless violence and killings in the name of that took place during those volatile times. But deconstructionists who are looking to reform or renovate the church would do well to study this time period, to learn from the reformers' triumphs and mistakes. My critique is simply focused on the destination. As you run away from something, what are you running to? As you walk away from something, what are you walking towards? Where are you going? What is the destination? I talked about three types of deconstructionists in last week's episode: the arsonist, the gentrifier, and the renovator. When I discussed them, I talked about them in relation to deconstructing or reconstructing homes and dwelling places. The arsonist is left without a home, which I think in many cases can be much worse than having a home, even if one's former home was very imperfect. The gentrifier has a new and completely different home, but there's no guarantee that this new house will be any better than the old one. And it could end up being worse. The renovator has an updated home, but some of the new renovations could very easily lead to new problems. Here's my main question and my main concern. Is the new living arrangement actually better than the old one? Is the destination better than the place of departure? Isn't it true that there are no perfect living spaces, no perfect structures, no perfect homes? If you move to a new neighborhood, if you become a member of a new religious structure, won't you just find the same problems or new problems? Different problems? If you change your address, if you change your ideology or worldview, how do you know that you won't just change it again in a few years? Every system and every community has its problems. But my concern is that the new thing is not always the better thing. Sometimes it's actually an even worse thing. Holding 2 degrees in theology, I've had the privilege to study the history of religions and the history of cults as well. When you study the history of cults, one thing that you will find is that many cult leaders came from Christian backgrounds, often fundamentalist backgrounds. But in deconstructing their Christian beliefs, regardless of how distorted those beliefs may have been, they actually ended up constructing something far worse. The same can be said for many cult members. They are often people who come out of organized religions, for one reason or another. And what seems like heaven on earth, what seems like paradise, what seems like a perfect dwelling place, the ideal home, soon becomes a living hell. How do I know that what I'm going to is better than what I'm coming from? That's my main question. I've gone through my own personal journey of deconstruction. I'm almost 35 years old now. I've had the opportunity to study all the major religions, all the major cults, and all the major worldviews and ideologies extensively. And I think I'm in a position where I can offer some counsel and some advice that has some worth. So if you would allow me to, I want to close with some words of advice for those who find themselves in the current deconstruction movement, no matter where you might fall within it. First, the value of self-criticism is so important here. We are capable of criticizing others. But are we capable of criticizing ourselves? Are we willing to criticize the destination with the same vigor with which we criticize the place of departure? Are we able to wage the same criticism towards our new home that we waged against our old home? Doing so might allow us to avoid a lot of new problems and new difficulties down the road. Second, is our criticism constructive and fruitful, or merely deconstructive and unfruitful? Sometimes we can be right while also being wrong. Sometimes our thoughts and words can be in the right, but our hearts and attitudes can be in the wrong. This can result in the validity of our words falling on deaf ears. Thirdly, I think it's wise to focus more on reconstructing than deconstructing, more on building and repairing than demolishing and destroying. Focus more on what you believe in, not on what you don't believe in. Emphasize what you love more than what you hate. Fourth, in the same spirit, I would encourage the one who's listening not to be a bridge burner, but a bridge builder. For the most part, on a general level, I don't think burning bridges is the way to go. In life, you never know how things are going to turn out. You never know who is going to come back into your life, and who you might need again, or even what you might want to return to. And that's why I think we should be very cautious and very leery about burning bridges. Finally, I'd encourage you not to be so quick to put yourself in a box and to label yourself. Be your own person. Think for yourself. Come to your own conclusions. For instance, you might find yourself in the deconstructionist camp, but it doesn't mean that you have to be an arsonist. Don't allow other people to dictate who you are and who you will become. Make your own decisions. Own your own decisions. Wherever you have come out of, wherever you are, and wherever you are going, I wish you all the best. Grace be with you, and peace be with you. Godspeed. This episode, and all episodes of Thinkersensitive, are available on thinkersensitive.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app today to listen to more thought-provoking content from Thinkersensitive.